The best weapon you can have in the Prohibition War is your mind. Fill your head with the knowledge you need by checking out this latest entry in the Russ Belville Show's Reformers Reader.
Welcome back, everybody. Today in Reformers Reader, we've got a special guest joining us, Dr. Ed Gogek, MD. He is the author of Marijuana Debunked, a handbook for parents, pundits, and politicians who want to know the case against legalization. Dr. Gogek, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for being here. And this show, of course, is hosted by a daily consumer of marijuana, and most of my listeners are regular adult consumers of marijuana. So our first question would be, why should government force us to stop?
The problem with marijuana, you know, I used to be a daily consumer, too.
According to your book, you were a daily consumer for 2 years in your late teenage years. I didn't start using marijuana until I was an adult. So
my main concern is really teenage use. If everybody who used marijuana started as an adult, I would not have written the book. But the problem is there's just no way to legalize it for adults and not have teenagers using it in larger numbers.
So I need to be punished, fined, rehabbed, and imprisoned so teenagers don't smoke pot.
None of those things are happening. No, people are not being imprisoned. Marijuana is almost entirely being ignored. Police arrest people when they find it, when they've arrested them for something else. They don't go looking for marijuana. So those things aren't actually happening.
Well, actually, last year, while I was in a car driving across the state of Utah that got pulled over for window...
I shouldn't say they weren't. For window tinting
being too dark. And because someone else in my car had marijuana on their person, I had to sit in a cage for 8 hours, and it cost me $5,000 to get out of that cage. So I wish the police weren't paying attention to it, but it happens to over 700,000 of us every year.
Okay, most of the people, it still is mostly marijuana found when they're looking for someone else. But I still look at, you know, there's 400 people in prison. 400 people in prison just on possession charges. They usually did something else. But there's 4 million teenagers using it on a regular basis.
Okay, so the cost is 1 per 10,000.
I don't know how to eliminate teenage use without keeping the drug illegal.
So how have we reduced teenage use of alcohol and tobacco to their lowest rates in 30 years? When I was a high school senior in 1985, 9 out of 10 of my cohorts had tried alcohol. Today, the rate's 7 out of 10. About 7 out of 10 had tried cigarettes. Today, the rate is 4 out of 10. Clearly, we can get kids to use drugs less and not lock up adults who use them.
Those rates are still really, really high.
But they're way down.
And they see adults using them.
But they're way down to the point now where fewer kids are using cigarettes than marijuana.
Right. But it's still a large number of both.
Right. But you're not denying the fact that under a legal regime of legal tobacco and legal alcohol where we didn't arrest any adults, we were able to have massive declines in the youth use rates of those drugs, correct?
It's been a huge effort, but it's still really high. The drugs that are really not used are the ones that are strictly illegal.
So
the
is it your
countries that have the lowest rates of marijuana use are the countries where it's strictly illegal?
Then
that's
how
it seems to work.
Then how is every argument you have in your book for keeping marijuana illegal not an argument to further illegalize the use of alcohol and tobacco by adults, since, as you say, the rates are still high?
You know, I work with all sorts, you know, alcoholics and smokers, mm-hmm. and most smokers have tried to quit and want to quit. Mm-hmm. And I actually think if we held a referendum and let only smokers vote, they would smoke to ban that. They would vote to ban the drug. So
okay.
Because it would help them. So I don't disagree with you on that.
Well, my father was an alcoholic and a tobacco smoker. He got clean and sober in 1980 and went back to college and became a drug and alcohol counselor. Didn't kick tobacco till 1996. Why do you not advocate for government forcing him to have to stop those behaviors?
Well, I don't really advocate for forcing people to stop.
No, wait a minute. I've read your book. You're advocating for something called SBIRT, Strategic Brief Intervention and Referral Treatment, something like that, where
right.
If I'm caught with marijuana, I have to engage with someone against my will to wants me to stop doing that. I don't understand why you want me to stop smoking pot.
I do think that daily marijuana use is a problem. I mean, it certainly was for me. It certainly is for most of the people I see.
Okay.
But again, it's, you know, usually what, I mean, I've heard other people say this, most people manage to never get caught. And I just don't know how to balance it out against the 4 million teenagers who are using this drug and harming themselves. You know, what the science is showing now is they're harming themselves permanently.
So what do you make of the recent reports that have shown that the youth disapproval rate of marijuana has gone up and their use rates have gone down in the period between 2002 and 2013, when you and others like you complained medical marijuana made it so available to them?
Well, no, it didn't. That happened. That's only happened since 2011. From 2002 to 2011, use, especially from 2005 to 2011, use went up, and almost all the increased use came from medical marijuana states. So that's actually evidence that those medical marijuana laws did increase teenage use.
So the increase in use that happened between 1992 and 1999, what do you attribute that to?
That one I'm not entirely sure, and I've asked a lot of people about that. And what I mostly hear is it is a time when there was a lot of anti-movement going on up until 92, and it really dropped off. A lot of the education dropped off. A lot of pushing the media not to promote it dropped off. And also, it's the time that the pro-legalization groups really got started and began more promoting. That's the main thing I would attribute it to, but that one I'm not as certain about, and I've asked people about it.
Okay, so the pro-legalization movement and the lack of anti-messaging raised the rates of marijuana use from 1990 to 2002 to a rate that's higher than what it is today, but then it declined and then it went up a little bit because of medical marijuana, but again, it's still lower than the one it was in 2002.
I think it's actually higher now. I don't have the...
Okay.
It's still pretty close.
We're speaking with Dr. Ed Gogek, MD. He's the author of Marijuana Debunked, a handbook for parents, pundits, and politicians who want to know the case against legalization. And to me, I think... In the previous debates we've had about marijuana legalization, it was a lot of abstract, you know, what might happen. But now we've got two states, Colorado and Washington, that have had over a year of market legalization in those states. Oftentimes we hear from opponents that alcohol and tobacco don't take in as much tax money as what they cost society. So since they've taken in $140 million in tax money in Washington and Colorado, can you quantify the $140 million or more in costs that has occurred?
I can't tell you the costs that have occurred, but I can pretty much tell you that it's going to be more than what's brought in. I mean, it's not just because it's always true with alcohol and tobacco, but the healthcare costs are going to end up taking quite a bit out of it. In my book, what I talked about was the cost for treating schizophrenia, people who decompensate because mm-hmm. of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be pretty significant. I can't quantify it. I know.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because we do have statistics on things like schizophrenia, and the statistics have shown that over about the past century, the rate of schizophrenia in this country and others has remained stable even as marijuana use has skyrocketed. So I think your schizophrenia connection is a little specious. And another connection you make in your book.
No. The causing schizophrenia, mm-hmm. I don't claim that in the book.
Okay.
And I don't think too many people claim it. But what I do say is that marijuana causes people with schizophrenia to decompensate and end up hospitalized. And hospitalization is a huge expense. It's estimated that I think about half the cost of hospitalization comes from people with schizophrenia who use marijuana.
But the statistics I'm citing are people admitted to hospitals for schizophrenic psychosis. And that rate has stayed the same whether cannabis has been used a lot or not at all. But let me go to another point in your book. You make a point about productivity, which always cuts to me because I was kicked out of a very productive, successful information technology career because my armpit hair had marijuana metabolites in it. I was one of the best employees there. Everyone loved me. But because my armpit hair had pot residue in it, I was no good for that company. When you cite these productivity statistics, you cited one researcher who studied teenagers who had smoked marijuana and found that once they reached adulthood, they earned less money. Isn't that indicative of the fact that they're drug tested for the jobs that pay more?
I doubt that. Although, they controlled for 16 factors, and I don't think they controlled for that one. So it could be, but I don't think that's the reason.
So
I am sorry. What happened to you, I'm very sorry about. Well, I don't like that. I don't like drug testing being used that way.
So what would be your ideal policy for marijuana? Obviously, you don't think we should make alcohol or tobacco illegal. Why not?
It would be really hard. Well, I'm not going to say that about tobacco.
Okay. So we should make tobacco illegal. We should prohibit it like marijuana, fine, arrest, and jail people who are caught with it.
I'm not going to get into a discussion on this, but I will tell you that at times, and in fact at times recently, we've come close to looking at prohibiting tobacco in this country.
Okay, but not alcohol. So, We're not going to prohibit alcohol.
The problem, alcohol is this really weird drug in mm-hmm. that half of it is actually used socially and half of it is used in a horribly abusive way.
And so marijuana is not used that way?
No, marijuana, I don't consider what's going on with marijuana social use.
All use of marijuana is drug abuse in your mind?
To me, mostly it's drug abuse. Here's what I mean by social use. There are people who drink alcohol purely for the taste, not for the buzz.
Uh-huh.
There's a huge amount of that. I do not see that with marijuana.
Okay, I heard this from Art Linkletter and Richard Nixon back in the 1970s on the White House tapes, and it makes no more sense now than it does then. If there's nothing more social than a group of people passing a joint around in a circle, I don't know what could be more social. And when it comes to alcohol use, if you really want to propose the idea that people drinking alcohol at a cocktail party are just doing it for the flavor, replace all the beer with O'Doul's and replace all the hard liquor with grape juice and see how far your party gets.
I will tell you that for me, the idea of drinking just for taste just makes no sense. But there really are people who do that. There are cultures that do that. I've not been, alcohol is a very weird drug that way.
So what you're telling me...
I'm not going to debate the legalization of alcohol.
Okay, so what you're telling me then, though, is that alcohol and tobacco remain legal for cultural reasons, and marijuana, then, you're banning it for cultural reasons. You're banning it because we don't have the same cultural clout, the same history, or the same numbers to fight you.
No, it's absolutely a historical thing. Alcohol and tobacco became ingrained in the culture long before we realized how harmful they were. If alcohol were invented today, we would ban it immediately like we do with spice and bath salts and all those other designer drugs that come along.
Okay, absolutely. But since it's been around so long, there's nothing we can do about it. We just have to accept the 88,000 people a year who die from it.
There's a lot we can do about it, but it's a huge fight against the alcohol industry. People are always trying to do all sorts of things to curb teenage use. That is one of the main reasons I do not want to see another drug legalized to the point that there's an industry that can lobby Congress and that can advertise and that can pitch their product to teenagers.
So because the most
another drug do.
See, because the most deadly drugs are legal, the least deadly drugs shouldn't be.
No, the most deadly drugs are not legal.
Yes, they are. Alcohol and tobacco objectively kill more people than anything else in this country. You wrote that in your book.
Because it is legal.
You wrote it in your book.
No. But that's because it is legal. And I said it in the book. I said the reason it says right in the book, alcohol is no more dangerous than black tar heroin. The problem with alcohol is you can get it at every store and it's available in most homes.
All right. That's all the time we've got, I'm afraid. But thank you for joining us, Dr. Ed Gogek, the author of Marijuana Debunked, a handbook for parents, pundits, and politicians who want to know the case against legalization. And thanks for joining us. I enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you very much, Russ.
All right, stay tuned. We're back with a radical rant, and I might have a few things to say. Stick around.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Growing plants.